Welcome to the James River Church Podcast. You're about to hear another inspirational message from Pastor John Lindell, lead pastor at James River Church. It's our prayer that this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
Today, I want to talk to you about believing God for big things. Believing God for big things. I didn't have these testimonies when I was writing the sermon. It would have just fired me up. But all week long, I was thinking about Joshua chapter 10. I wasn't thinking I would even preach on it. I was just thinking. You ever have a scripture that just sticks in your mind and you can't get it off your mind? And every time you start thinking about the Lord, you start thinking about that scripture. And it's God's way of saying, I've got something for you that I want your spirit to be fed by, strengthened by, and encouraged by. And so toward the end of the week, I knew this was God's word for us today. So my prayer is that this message will encourage you, that it will strengthen you, and that it will cause you to believe God for big things. One of the things about being in ministry, and now Debbie and I have been in ministry as lead pastors for 41 years, and you get the opportunity to see God do some extraordinary things, some big things in ministry, and some of them so real, so big, that it's almost like they happened yesterday. We took our first pastorate when we were 22. David was 6 months old, and it was out in western Kansas, a town called Colby, and it was really... They say there's no church like your first church, and it's true. And at the same time, it was a wild church in the sense that it had had a lot of division, a lot of upheaval, and three pastors in a very short period of time. And so we went out there and learned essentially in our 4.5 years of ministry there a lifetime of ministry lessons. When we got there, the church was in debt, had a mortgage, and they had borrowed more money to pay back salary and bills. And the first week I was there, I was only there like 3 days, and the vice chairman came over to the church, and we had a private conversation, and he cut my salary, unilaterally cut it by 25% because he said, we can't afford to pay you any more than this. And the church, you know, had an addition that they'd added on, and they were trying to do a remodel at the same time, and they ran out of money, and they weren't able to finish it. And on top of that, I mean, this is when the economy was not great anywhere in the country. Interest rates, if you remember, at the start of the 80s were very high, so 18 to 21%. In fact, Debbie and I had a car, and our interest rate was 13%. We had a housing loan for our house in Colby, and because there was no place to rent, we had to buy a house, and our adjustable rate mortgage was 10.5% going to 11%. It was just a very unusual time financially. And out in that west side of the state, there's a lot of oil wells, and Schlumberger had shut down all their operations, so the oil fields were laying people off, and that certainly affected Colby, and in turn affected the church, and the church wasn't big to begin with. And we've been there a few months when I decided to go to the bank and visit with the president about borrowing money to complete the addition and to kind of finish things up. And he laughed, and he said, "You're new, so let me give you a little bit of a history lesson and some background." And he pulled out a file and showed me how the church had missed not one, but many mortgage payments over the life of the loan. And then he added, "You're lucky that we don't call your note and seize your property." And I remember going back to the church and thinking, you know, it's in March, and going back to the church and thinking about what he had said, embarrassed for the church, embarrassed because of the reputation of the church and the community, and going into the auditorium of that church and beginning to pray and just saying, God, I really feel we need to do this, and there's no money there, and just praying about it. And all of a sudden, God put it into my heart to pay the church off in 9 months and raise enough money to remodel the building. The time the church had maybe 130 people. Again, the economy is depressed, and in today's dollars, it would be like asking a church of that size to come up with $557,000 in cash. So I went to the board the next Sunday, and I told them what God had put into my heart. And they gave me a look like, you're not from these here parts, are you? And then they began to tell me why it couldn't be done. They said I would fail. They said I was going to get a lesson, but they said to go ahead and try. So I thought, well, you know, I'm going to have a fundraiser. So I announced that Sunday, next month, we're going to do a fundraiser. We're going to raise money, and this is what we're going to do with the money. And so that Sunday came in April, and we raised in cash and pledges $13,000. And when the board heard the amount, they said, we told you it wasn't going to work, so what are you going to do now? And I said, what do you mean it's not going to work? It's already working. We got $13,000 we weren't going to get. We're well on our way. And they looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, I believe that by the end of the year, we'll have this building paid off and we'll have enough money to remodel the church. And so 8 months passed. And on December 19th, we paid off the mortgage and we had enough money cash-wise to remodel the church and to finish it. God did something big. And the God who did big things in the Bible and the God who did a big thing for a 23-year-old pastor is the same God who wants to do big things for you and big things for people who are listening today, because he's a God who delights to show himself powerful. So this morning, what I want us to do is I'd like you to turn with me to Joshua chapter 10, and we're going to learn some principles, three of them, about what it takes to see God do big things. And when you come to Joshua chapter 10, the setup for the story is Joshua and the leaders of Israel had made a treaty, a peace treaty with the Gibeonites. They didn't know they were from nearby. The Gibeonites fooled them. And so Joshua had made a treaty, an alliance with them. And when the Amorite kings in the area heard that Gibeon had done that, they gathered five kings together to attack the Gibeonites. And the Gibeonites sent word to Joshua and said, we need you to help us. And that problem set up the opportunity for God to do big things. Let's read it, Joshua chapter 10, verse 1. Now, Adonai Zedek, the king of Jerusalem, heard that Joshua had taken Ai and totally destroyed it, doing to Ai and its king as he had done to Jericho and its king, and that the people of Gibeon had made a treaty of peace with Israel and were living near them. He and his people were very much alarmed at this because Gibeon was an important city, like one of the royal cities. It was larger than Ai, and all of its men were good fighters. So Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, appealed to Hoham, king of Hebron, Piram, king of Jarmuth, Japhia, the king of Lachish, and Deber, the king of Eglon. Come up and help me attack Gibeon, he said, because it has made peace with Joshua and the Israelites. The Gibeonites then sent word to Joshua in the camp at Gilgal, do not abandon your servants. Come up to us quickly and save us. Help us, because all the Amorite kings from the hill country have joined forces against us. And those verses set up the scenario by which God did a big thing for Joshua. But we err if we only see it as history. When we see what God did in the Bible, it not only gives us an example of what he has done, but it gives us an example of what he delights to do. And the God in the Bible who was honored to show himself powerful and to deliver his people is the same God today who delights to show himself powerful and to deliver you and I in the areas that we need him to do it. Now, if we're going to see God do big things, three things we have to do. Number one, we have to believe God for big things. You have to believe him for big things. Joshua 10, verse 7. So Joshua marched up from Gilgal with his entire army, including all the best fighting men. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not be afraid of them. I have given them into your hand. Not one of them will be able to withstand you." Now notice, before they go into battle, Joshua is hearing from the Lord. He positioned himself to listen to God because he knew he needed a word from God. And what I want you to notice is when you go through the book of Joshua, Gilgal is not just a geographical reference point, but Gilgal is the place where Joshua hears from God. It's the place where he heard about circumcising the Israelites. It's the place where he heard about how to take Jericho. And here in Joshua chapter 10, Gilgal is the place where God is speaking to Joshua once again. And he's speaking to Joshua because Joshua's listening for a word from God. Let me just say this. If you're going to believe God for big things, it will always come out of your time with God. The issue is never how big is the thing you are believing God for. The issue almost always is, have you heard from God and do you believe him? You know, honestly, what stops a lot of people from believing God is they aren't spending time with God in a way that incorporates listening to God. It's hard to hear from God if you're doing all the talking. It's hard to hear what God has to say if all you want him to do is hear what you have to say. Prayer at its heart is spending time with the King of Kings on the one hand, your best friend on the other, and not only worshiping him, not only giving him thanks, but it is also listening to him. I would suggest before you start giving him your laundry list of things. As well, for some people, it's hard to believe God for big things because they start looking at what they don't have. They start thinking of what can't be done. I mean, you think about Colby. I could have looked at the economy. I could have looked at the congregation. I could have looked at the circumstances. I could have listened to a leadership who did not in that moment have the faith to believe God for big things. They did after that. Sometimes we're too given to what we see rather than what we hear from God. People look at their history, they say, well, it's never happened before. They look at their history and say, well, I believed one time and it didn't happen. Or they look at the size of their problem, and all the while they've forgotten the size of their God. We have a big God who does big things if we'll believe him to do it. I want to ask you this question. How big is your God? Many times we can answer that question by looking at the size of our request. Because what we're willing to ask God for has much to do with how big we believe God is. And let me just say this. It's not just you and I deciding what we want God to do, but it's us listening to God and deciding whether or not, having heard from him, we'll believe him to do what he said he's going to do. But it all starts with, if you want to receive big things from God, you got to believe God for big things. Number two, battle for big things. Look at it in Joshua chapter 10, verse 7. So Joshua marched up from Gilgal with his entire army, including all the best fighting men. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not be afraid of them. I've given them into your hand. Not one of them will be able to withstand you." After an all-night march from Gilgal, Joshua took them by surprise. God gave them the promise in the middle of these verses, but the promise for big things didn't mean big things were automatically theirs. I think this is where a lot of Christians miss what God wants to do in their life. I mean, a part of believing God, I mean, here they are, they're going to have to march 25 miles through the night. That's a long ways. And still have to go into battle. You know, a part of faith is not only believing God can do it, but it's doing our part by participating with God in what He wants to do, and that might require a fight on our part. Not always does faith require a fight, but sometimes it does. Sometimes if we want to see God do something big, we got to be willing to go into battle. I mean, at times we'll hear people say, relative to God's will, they'll say things like, I know God has something big for my family, or I know God's got something big for my future. But you're not going to see big things if you aren't willing to take the time and the energy to go into battle to get the breakthrough. Verse 10, look at it. The Lord threw them into confusion before Israel, who defeated them in a great victory at Gibeon. Israel pursued them along the road going up to Beth Horon and cut them down all the way to Azekah and Makkedah as they fled before Israel on the road down from Beth Horon to Azekah. The Lord hurled large hailstones down on them from the sky, and more of them died from the hailstones than were killed by the swords of the Israelites. I want to ask you a question. When did God throw the Amorite army into confusion? Was it before the Israelites marched through the night or after? It was after. When did God drop hailstones? Was it before they went into battle or after they went into battle? You see, there are some Christians, and they're praying, they're just not marching. They're praying, they're just not fighting. Some of you are praying for your marriage, but you're not marching by getting into marriage 911. Some of you are praying for your marriage, but you're not willing to get counseling. You're not willing to fight for your marriage. So I don't want counseling. Are you willing to fight for your marriage? Some of you are praying for your finances, but you're not marching by tithing and giving the first 10% to God, which is His. Some of you are praying for God to move in your kids' lives, but you're not marching by getting them to camp or youth group on Wednesday nights, or even praying with them in your home. You got to fight. You got to do battle. You can have all the promises from God you want, but in most cases, if you aren't willing to march, you'll live in defeat. I could have said it, Colby, God, if you want us to have the money, just send it. But you know what? There needed to be an exercise of faith that said, we're going to do a fundraiser. I could have said, you know what? They'll laugh at me. If I get up and I tell them I'm going to do this, they'll just say, he is young and dumb. They said it. But God honored the faith of proclaiming that I believe God's going to deliver us. You say, was there ever any doubt in your mind? I don't remember when I think back on it. I just was sure God was going to do it. He said He'd help me do it. I believed He would do it. Because we serve a God who delights to do big things. And here's the good news. When we go into battle for big things, God multiplies our efforts to bring about big things. I think that 13,000 in pledges was really important. It didn't get us all the way, but we were never going to get there all the way on our own anyway. We were only going to make it if God helped us. That's the only way we were going to make it. And in this situation, what happens, look at it in verse 11, it's so interesting. As they fled before Israel on the road down from Beth Horon to Azekah, the Lord hurled large hailstones down on them from the sky. and more of them died from the hailstones than were killed by the swords of the Israelites. In other words, Joshua and the army did what they could do, and God did what only he could do. Listen, if we're gonna see God do big things in our life, you gotta believe God for big things. And you've gotta be willing to battle for big things. Number three, boldly pray for big things. Now watch this. This is probably one of the most stunning scriptures, requests in all the Bible. On the day the Lord gave the Amorites over to Israel, Joshua said to the Lord in the presence of Israel. You know, faith will die if left unexpressed. What you say has everything to do with what God will do. Because there's something about putting yourself out there. There's something, because how will people know it was God unless you tell them, this is what I believe God's gonna do? They're just gonna say, oh, it was a coincidence. Oh, that was nice. Oh, look what happened. But when you tell people, this is what God is gonna do, I would suggest to you, it releases something in your life and in your situation that makes it possible for God to do it and get the glory. If you believe, you can say to this mountain, be thou removed and cast into the sea. Say it. It's not just think it, it's say it. You're saying it. Something about the public proclamation. I mean, I remember when we were getting ready to build the West Campus, and it was during the Great Recession, and several business leaders had told me, A, they wouldn't be able to help us financially, and B, they thought it was a terrible idea and the wrong time to do it. And my response was not to say, well, I don't care. My response was to say, you know what? If they're saying that, I got to go back. I got to pray. I got to hear from God. But once I knew, hey, we've been hearing from God, and this is God's will, we move forward. And I can remember Vision Sunday when I was sitting in the stadium seating watching it on a Saturday before the Sunday, and it came to that part on the West Campus and the design, and we were showing the plans, and it was quite stunning and breathtaking and amazing. And I remember as I was sitting there watching it, I began to get a little scared, because it was the whole idea of proclaiming it to the people. And I could just feel myself tensing up. And in that moment, God spoke to my heart. I can remember it like it was yesterday. And the Lord said, John, if you'll pray, do it. If you won't, don't. Sometimes you have to be willing to boldly ask God for big things. Sometimes you have to be willing to say publicly, this is what I believe God is going to do. You need to say it to your family. You need to say it to your life group. You need to say it to your spouse. You need to say it to your kids. You need to be willing to say, I believe in a big God who does big things, and this is what I'm praying for. So Joshua said to the Lord in the presence of Israel, O sun, stand still over Gibeon. O moon, over the valley of Ajalon. That valley, incidentally, if you ever go on a tour to Israel and you're driving from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, you go right through that valley. I remember the first time we were there, our guide said, see that? Remember where the sun stood still? That's the valley where Joshua prayed that prayer. I'll never forget it. So the sun stood still, and the moon stopped till the nation avenged itself on its enemies, as it is written in the book of Jashar. The sun stopped in the middle of the sky and delayed going down about a full day. Amazing, amazing. Joshua prays this bold prayer in the presence of Israel. Why does he pray publicly? Because he wanted there to be no doubt God was fighting for them, and he wanted his prayer to build their faith, because something powerful happens when you're willing to pray publicly with other people for a miracle to take place. To declare healing, it takes faith when you're gathering around somebody and declaring healing. It takes faith to believe God's going to come through when you need something that only he can do. When a person isn't worried about what people will think, when a person isn't worried about what people will say, when a person isn't worried about looking foolish or naive or being ridiculed, powerful things will happen. Joshua was asking God to do something that had never happened before in human history. He was asking God to do something that no one had ever seen before. He was asking God to do something that was scientifically impossible. Verse 13, the sun stopped in the middle of the sky and delayed going down about a full day. And there has never been a day like it before or since, a day when the Lord listened to a man. Surely the Lord was fighting for Israel. And the critic says, oh, well, see, that the Bible, what a bunch of fairy tales. Talk about a myth. And to that I say with Dr. Vance Havner, they are myth taken. Some of you will get it later. You say, what did he say? How big is your God? Big God, big miracles. Little or absent God, no miracles. You choose. Let me point something out to you here. Earlier, Joshua believed God for a big thing, and God said he would do. Remember, he said, go up and fight them. I'm going to help you. At the end of the story, Joshua believed God for a big thing that he spontaneously asked him to do because he needed him to do it. What I want to suggest to you is this, that if Joshua hadn't believed God for the big thing God said he would do, he would not have had faith to ask God for the big thing he needed God to do. You say, well, what's the upshot to me? Can you believe God for the big things he said in his word? Greater things than I have done will you do because I go to the Father? Can you believe that? Can you believe God for the big thing and believe the promise that says, if you ask anything in my name, I will do it? Can you believe that? Can you believe the word and take it at face value that says, ask and you'll receive, seek and you'll find, knock and it shall be open? Can you believe that? If you can't believe what he said, it will almost be impossible for you to believe the thing you need that he hasn't said anything about. Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20, God can do anything, you know. Far more than you could ever imagine or guess or request in your wildest dreams. Do you realize, God is big. And there is nothing that is impossible for him. Nothing that is too hard for him. I just love verse 14. There has never been a day like it before or since. A day, what? When God decided to make the sun stand still on his own? Nope, that's not what it says. When the Lord listened to a man. Never been a day before or since like that. Except I believe God's a big God who does big things, and this story is put here for a reason. That there are sometimes God puts things in our heart that in the moment we know are from him. When you're walking with the Lord, you'll know, many times you'll just have this sense, this is from God. You say, well, what if I'm wrong? Well, then you'll learn that you were wrong that time, and another time you'll be right, and you'll learn the difference. But God does big things. And I would just challenge you not to let your prayer life or your faith be framed by your disappointments. Because that will diminish everything you'll ever ask God for. You can't look at what wasn't done. You have to look at what God has done. And God honors bold prayers. Every time Joshua prayed, very interesting look at Joshua. Every time he prays in the book of Joshua, God does something supernatural. Anytime he doesn't pray, he gets in big trouble. And the point of this passage isn't for you and I to look at it and say, oh my, look at that. God made the sun stand still. I wonder how he did that. The passage is designed to show us the lengths to which God will go when his people pray for big things. Are you ready to see God do big things? You got to believe him for big things. You got to be willing to battle for big things. And sometimes the battle's not for yourself, it's for somebody else. I was talking to a life group leader and he said, you know, we had a gentleman in our group and still in their group who had PTSD and because of that had some significant struggles. So the life group did this. The life group said, we're going to fast 3 days a week for this man's healing. And they fasted. And they fasted. And they fasted. And they fasted. And I think it was after a year, he was completely healed. All I'm saying to you is, sometimes you got to battle. See, too many people want the instant, and I'm not saying God doesn't do that. Hey, he does instant things. But I also know this, sometimes you got to step into the battle and say, I'm going to fight this thing out because I believe this is God's will. In Colby, I didn't just sit back after the 13,000 and say, well, be interesting to see what happens. No, I can tell you what, I'm in that auditorium storming heaven every single day asking God to do big things. I'm fasting asking God to do big things. I'm battling to see God do big things. I'm praying a bold prayer for big things. And God did it. And I just know, and think of this now, all these years later, almost 40 years later, it's like it just happened yesterday. If you ever see God do big things, you'll never forget it. If you ever have God do something big for you, you'll always remember it. And you'll have a testimony, but you're never going to have a testimony unless you have a test.